So you want to work in healthcare, but you're not sure where to start. I'm Leah, your host of this podcast, and I'm bringing you the inside scoop on healthcare professions. From doctors to PAs to healthcare administrators and CRNAs, my goal is to let professionals tell their stories and give honest reviews of the careers they have chosen. So whether you're considering a job in healthcare or you simply have an interest in what we do, this show is for you.
Welcome to the So You Want to Work in Healthcare podcast. Today, we have a very special guest. She is an RN, MSN, also DMP MBA candidate. She's a lead clinical specialist for thoracic perfusion in America and also happens to be one of my favorite social media personalities. So welcome, Lauren Lechleiter.
Thank you. Happy to be here. Glad we finally got to do this.
I know. It's been a long time coming, but I'm happy you're here. And if you guys don't follow Lauren, she's PRN sarcasm on social media, and she's hilarious. I honestly don't know how you don't have more followers. Like, your stuff is like gold content in my
mind. It's niche humor. That's probably why.
It is pretty niche. It is niche. Today's episode and all episodes on this podcast are not medical advice, and our views do not reflect the views of our employers. So first question I ask everyone is why healthcare, why medicine? So tell me about your story. Like, what brought you into healthcare? How did you get here? How did you become a nurse?
Yeah, so this is kind of maybe a bit of a different answer than, like, I wanted to help people, and which I did. But I grew up in healthcare. My father was hit and almost killed by a drunk driver when I was 3. So I've never known any difference. So my first chores were like cleaning the wheelchair, helping him with his trach cares. So it was just really embedded in like my childhood. Fast forward, when I was 10, I was diagnosed with a bone tumor. So then I just had that whole experience myself. So I don't know that it was ever like an active choice. It was just, I was so comfortable in an environment where a lot of people weren't. And I understood it. I understood the labs. I understood what vitals were supposed to be. So when I started taking some of the, these like prereq courses, they were so ungodly easy, thank God, just because I had already lived in that environment. And so then I was like, I might as well just do this. I didn't actively choose nursing. I think where I come from, which is small town, Midwest, rural Iowa, where everybody looks the same, prays the same, thinks the same. Only about 34% of adults have a high school degree, and even wow. less have a bachelor's degree. So, and this is great. Rural America serves its purpose, you know, but for young women, we were never really told like, hey, you can go somewhere. You can be a physicist if you want. You can be a physician if you want. It was teacher, nurse, farmer's wife. And those are all really important things. But I think for me that was my kind of ticket out.
Yeah.
Educationally and financially, I needed to break my own cycle there. And so I chose what felt comfortable and what was an easy path for me at the time. I'm glad I did. I have no regrets, but that's kind of how I fell into it.
I mean, that's pretty heavy stuff.
Yeah.
Is your dad okay now?
Yeah, he's permanently disabled, and he was 32 when it happened at the time, which is my age now, so I can't imagine. But he makes the best of it, and it's he's okay.
Good. It's interesting how a lot of us have these like experiences as children, and then with healthcare, and it kind of guides us into healthcare, and it makes so much sense that you were just, comfortable with that. It was always in your life, I guess, since you could really remember. So, wow. And then tell me about the bone tumor. What kind of bone tumor was it?
It's complex. And I honestly had it easier than a lot of the other patients and that I was seeing in there, but everything is good. I got a graft and we're all going to do my yearly scans.
Good.
But yeah, it kind of reiterated to me that I wasn't afraid of the hospital and doctors didn't scare me. I actually liked them. And so that was maybe kind of meant to be.
Yeah. So you had a good experience in healthcare.
Yeah, I did.
I feel like it's either the one or the other, right? Either you have a really good experience or you have a bad experience and you want to fix it. So,
So
then you kind of just found yourself in nursing because it was comfortable for you. So where did you go to school? Did you go locally?
Yeah. So I went to Coe College, which is a small liberal arts school in Iowa. Mm-hmm. It's only about 1,300 students. So for some people, that's like their high school size. Graduating high school class was 87 people. So a 1300 person campus was huge to me until about my sophomore year when I was like, oh, this is just high school elevated.
So
I went to Coe College for undergrad, loved it. I wouldn't have done it any different. I went on a music scholarship.
Cool.
And then I did my master's in Phoenix, and DMP MBA between St. Louis and Baltimore. So all over, really. But yeah, all roads lead to Iowa at one point.
Wow. So, okay, I have a few questions on that. So, well, my first one is, this is going to sound like a dumb question, but when you have like DMP MBA candidate written, you're done with your DMP MBA.
I'm done with my DMP. I've added the MBA portion to it. So it's one consecutive degree. So I can't say I have it because I have like this much left, but you know, life. So
cool. Good for you. I've always thought about doing an MBA. I just like haven't gotten to that point yet, but I think a lot of jobs look for an MBA in leadership. So
yeah. And honestly, once you're used to like navigating, helping people stay earthside for a living, the MBA aspect and the numbers and the ROI, it's not easy, but it's manageable. I'm glad I did this order.
Were you true bedside nurse for a few years before you did what you're doing now? Or tell me about what you're doing now, because I did not really look into it at all because I wanted you to just give me the whole story.
Yeah. So first and foremost, I will always be a bedside nurse, you know, nurse always. I think that when you elevate to levels that are above that, and then you're asking nurses to do different tasks or be malleable to certain new protocols, that if you're not in it, you can't ask them to do that. So my number one thing is I'm always a nurse number one, and I will always work at the bedside. So even in my current role, I pick up shifts in the ICU because I'm not above it. But yeah, right now I work as a clinical specialist for a med device company that runs perfusion for organ transplantation. So I started as a bedside nurse at the University of Iowa, Go Hawks, in a very unique unit that took like post-lobectomy, post-esophagectomy straight from the ER or the OR, excuse me, LVADs, heart transplants, lung transplants, all EP patients, all heart failure patients. So like we got all of it, and it was just an absolute like mind explosion as a 22-year-old. But it set me up in the best populations that I like to care for, which is heart failure and transplantation. So I worked there for about 4 years, was charge nurse within the first year because that's how it goes, and really felt comfortable. You know, I think that you shouldn't seek an advanced degree or seek to be a travel nurse or anything unless you are comfortable with every role of a code by yourself, essentially. And so that was my comfort precipice of what I needed to do before I was a travel nurse. So then I traveled, went to Alaska, went to Dallas, went to Baltimore, California. Cool. And then when I wanted to come back to the Midwest and settle down, my husband also works in ortho. So he really wanted to be back in the Midwest. His family's here. So we came back from Alaska to the contiguous, and I was like, I need to do something different. I worked for an OPO for a little bit, allocating organs, running donor criteria. And then
tell our viewers what an OPO is.
Yeah, it's an organ procurement organization. So anytime somebody wants to be an organ donor, this is the kind of company or program that will facilitate that, because it's not the hospital's job. But then I had worked COVID ECMO the entire pandemic. I sat bedside, and you know, that was horrific for anybody who worked it and anybody who experienced, you know, the patient side of it. And from there, I think it really solidified my love of perfusion and pumps. They're great. I'm such like a trinket tinket type person. I just want to build things and see how they work and see how we can affect patient care with it. So from there, this position that I'm currently in kind of fell into my lap, because it's running ECMO on organs that are being assessed for transplantation, which is just the best of all of the worlds to me.
Awesome. That is really cool. I mean, I really only understand a little of it because I can only fix bones, but
not only, I can't do that.
I mean, I don't even do it. My boss does it. But, you know, it's like that stuff is so foreign to me. So when I walk into a room of a patient who's like, you know, in our step down unit, we don't really even have a technical ICU, I'm just like so overwhelmed. And it just, I give kudos to the nurses, you guys, like for figuring all of that stuff out and managing all that, because it's like on another level. But that's very interesting. And I like how it just fell into your lap. And now I like how much you like it. You seem like you really love it.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, to be fair, I did set myself up quite well for that, right? I honed in on my specific interest. I got to the top of the level of what you could be for a bedside nurse in that specific interest. And then the things come to you, because there are so few people who do that.
Yeah. And back to what you said about not, you know, you need to be able to still do the tasks before or while delegating them. So I think that's like such a commendable trait. And I don't know if you saw, but I interviewed a couple of nurse managers on a couple episodes ago, and they were like so big on that. Like you have to be able to just like be in the trenches with everybody. And I think it goes for any job, really. And same as me being a PA and precepting students, like, I'm not going to ask a student to do anything I'm not going to be able to do too, you know?
Yeah. So. Or that you don't know how to do. That's so unfair. Yeah. So I think that there should be a federal, honestly, and this is such a controversial take, but I think that there should be a federal mandate that every nurse leader, manager, administrator has to work 80% in their given role and 20% on the floor.
I mean, I'd be down with that. It makes sense.
Yeah.
It makes sense. Cause it just makes people feel like it makes the team feel more comfortable too. It's like, you know how it is, but yeah, I'm not against that.
Yeah. You want to respect your boss. You want to know that your boss knows what you're doing.
Could you go into a little bit more detail? Let's just say, like, lay out what a typical day looks for you in your job as, would you say a perfusionist or
what do you actually... I didn't go to perfusion school, not a perfusionist.
Okay. So that's different.
Yep. Yeah. So perfusionists are usually RTs that go to like a different perfusion program. You can be a nurse and go to perfusion school. I didn't. I went the ECMO specialist route. So I was all roads lead to Oz essentially. But so my typical day as a clinical specialist that works in perfusion for transplantation is, you know, I wake up, I check my emails, I make sure that none of our customers need any assistance with kits or any cases oncoming. If there's a middle of the night case, I answer the phone and I help them run it if I can't be there. But the majority of the time I am trying to be on site for these cases and I'm trying to help them run them. If not, I'm training. I'm training surgeons and staff on how to run our device and how to run our equipment. And there are multiple perfusion based companies within this realm and people, you know, can look them up and there's a couple and they pretty much all run the same. But as a clinical specialist, my job is to make sure that the surgical staff in the OR knows how to run our device, to be there if I can, and to help troubleshoot anything so that these programs are successful. So I'm in the OR all the time. I'm talking to UNOS and OPTN all the time, which are the governing bodies for transplants. So that's really cool. There's a lot of autonomy in my role. If a customer reaches out and says, we need to do a new training on this device, can you come these days? I schedule myself out a couple of weeks. Like right now I'm scheduled until June. There's so much planning that goes into it, but then it allows me to have like a life versus the 12, 16, 20 hour shifts that you do in the hospital and where you don't get your schedule until the week before. So my main tasks are training surgical teams and perfusion teams to run the device and run the protocols so that they can run these procedures. But I also staff them as well. So when a hospital calls me and says, we're in a staffing crunch or we're not super comfortable, will you come help us? I get on a plane. So right now I cover the entire country.
Wow.
But it's fun. It's yeah, whatever. So it's a good way to see things. It's a good way to interact with some, you know, world-renowned surgical teams, which is pretty cool. And everybody in this role for different companies feels this way. I just am not limited to a territory, which is really nice.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's a lot of education based. It's a lot of being an expert in this very niche particular field, which is fun.
Very cool. Do you end up traveling a lot?
Yeah. So I'm probably flying twice a week, 3 weeks of the month.
Wow. Twice a week.
Yep.
I mean, probably have some good points.
I do.
Is it hard going around to like constantly having to learn a new place, a new hospital, or do you kind of like that?
I don't particularly love how different every center does things, but that also kind of got beat out of me as a travel nurse. Like you show up, you're a guest in someone's hospital, you do what they want to do essentially, as long as it's not, you know, injurious to anybody, and you adapt. It is hard. It's more hard not being at home, I think, right now. I'm getting older and I'm turning into an antisocial like hermit. So
I know. I'm always like looking like, what could I do from home that I don't have to leave? Although I like the interaction. I don't know if I could do a completely like work from home job, to be honest with you.
Yeah. No.
So this is your job with the medical device company, basically, but you also pick up shifts at your home hospital as a bedside nurse.
I do. Yep, I will live and die in the ICU. So I probably pick up 5 shifts a month, give or take. And it's only because, and they're not full 12s anymore. I only pick up 8s because, you know, I'm old. But it's only because I have so much more time now that I'm not working at the bedside that I don't feel like my days off are just spent rotting in bed with like Gatorade and prayers.
Catering to prayers. So does that mean that the perfusion job is kind of like intermittent? Are you doing something for that as well every day, or is it just as needed?
No, it's pretty constant. The perfusion aspect is what propels our device. And when I'm not physically running it, I'm reading the protocols. And when I'm not physically reading the protocols, I'm lobbying legislation for donor rights. But it's pretty constant. Even when I go pick up shifts at the bedside, I'm running ECMO. So it's like...
Really? Okay. Yeah, that was my question. Like, yeah. You're basically picking up overtime. You're working extra hours for sure. Okay.
But it's still less than what I worked as a full-time nurse.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, the hours itself, not the travel time, obviously, but.
I'm all about that these days. I'm over the whole hustle. Work 60 hours it. A week, yeah. Done with the hustle.
No, thanks. I can't eat a Pop-Tart and go into the shift anymore. I'll be in a diabetic crisis.
I know.
It's I know. Ibuprofen and like a gulp of air and just like positive vibes at this point.
So true. So true.
Help me.
So you touched on your academic process a bit. Where are you located right now?
Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Oh, you're in Minneapolis. Okay. But you went to school in Iowa.
I did.
Okay. And then how long was nursing school?
9 years. So 4 years on 4 years undergrad, master's, NP, DNP, MBA.
Wow, 9 years. Okay. You're doing your MBA online or are you doing it in person?
It's a hybrid program. So I have to be on site for certain presentations and lectures and like projects. But the majority of your basic accounting things are online because, yeah, you don't have to sit in a classroom for that. I prefer to learn online personally, other than obvious physical skills that I need to do. If you're learning how to put a chest tube in online, then you need to reevaluate. But
yeah.
I can do spreadsheets online.
What made you choose this path? Like, what made you choose DNP versus like a nurse practitioner kind of role?
Yeah, so I originally thought that I wanted to be a nursing professor. I like the academia lifestyle, but I cannot get myself out of the OR. I just can't let it go. So that's what I got my master's in, was nursing education. And then I quickly kind of let that go. But I did teach for a while. I wanted to do the highest terminal degree I possibly could, aside from a PhD, because I'm not that crazy, maybe one day, because I do want to work within legislative bodies and I need to have the credentials to support that.
Wow. That's commendable. I like try to stay away from like legislation and politics, but we need people like you. So
yeah,
that's great. For someone who's listening who might want to follow the same path as you, how much did it end up costing in the end?
You can do it a lot smarter than I did it, to be completely transparent. So when I left high school, I was, for all transparency purposes, a ward of the state. So FAFSA didn't apply to me. So I was going in as an emancipated minor, had no guidance, had no idea what the heck I was signing up for when I signed up for some of these heinously predatory loans. If I was going to redo it, I would have gone to a state school, not a private. Not that I didn't love my experience, but my undergrad cost $76,000. I paid 30 of that after my academic and music scholarships, thank God. But yeah, state school, you're going to get the same education. Honestly, nursing school is nursing school. It's brutal. It's hard. And it's not indicative of real life. So just know that going into it. Master's programs do get pricey, but you have to be really, really smart about what you choose and how much they're going to support you, particularly if you need clinical placements. Don't go somewhere that can't support you in that. So I paid another 22 for my master's and another 27 for my DNP MBA because a lot of my master's classes matriculated in. So overall, 120, 121K in debt. There's a path that you have to follow to be in certain roles, and this is what I had to do. So,
are you planning on or are you currently doing any like loan forgiveness programs, or are you just kind of paying them off on your own?
Yeah. So I was in a loan forgiveness program when I was working at the University of Iowa because it's a not-for-profit state-funded hospital. Right now, I don't qualify for those things. And my income cap, we can talk about income transparency too if we need to, is a bit over that. And to sound like a bleeding heart and maybe a little bit of, I don't know, crazy person, but I make the money and I can pay it back. So I do. And I think that those programs are for people who are in different positions than I am. And I'll own it,
If
that makes me sound crazy, fine.
No, it doesn't make you sound crazy. I mean, I did a loan forgiveness program and in the last few years, I probably didn't need it, but I was, 7 years in or six years in. And I'm like, well, it's there for me. So if it's there for me, I'm going to continue to use it. Plus, I came out with $260,000 in debt after undergrad and PA school. So I'm like, you know what?
Yeah, that's for you. Yeah, that's for you. Yeah, absolutely. And it worked. Shame.
It worked out. It worked out. Some people told me it was a scam, but we did it.
I know there's a cap on how many people can be in those programs. It's the same reason I don't feel right shopping at Goodwill and like thrifting, right? Like I love it, but that's for somebody and I'm not going to mess with it. So
Yeah. No, I hear you on that. So we're all in a lot of debt after we start our healthcare careers. A lot of us.
For sure.
I just want to know, what did you do for music? Like, did you play an instrument? What did you get your scholarship for?
Yeah, I played the French horn, so I was an orchestra girly. Yeah, cool. So French horn, piano, violin, trumpet, those are all my repertoire. Wow. So I wanted to go on an athletic scholarship. I ended up getting hurt before going to college, so it didn't work out, but music was a solid backup choice, even though I think I probably enjoyed it a little bit more.
What did you do for sports?
Track and gymnastics. I know you can't see it, but I'm only 4'11", so I'm like the perfect build. Yeah.
It is so funny when you don't meet people in person. You have like no idea. Like you come off taller than that. I know.
But like I'm sitting on a bar stool right now and now I'm standing.
So I am literally the opposite. I have like the shortest torso ever. So when I sit on a bar stool, people think I'm short and I stand up and I'm like 2 feet taller. Yeah.
You're like, oh, okay.
Oh, that's so funny. Cool. So I'm sorry you got hurt, but I'm glad it all worked out for you in the end. Oh, you said income transparency. You don't have to tell me how much you make, but if you want to go into like how much somebody in your position, because it is, you are in kind of a very specific, more rare role in healthcare. Yeah. So I think it's important to know how much somebody might be able to make in this position.
100%. Yeah. So cumulatively, a bad year for me is 200K. My best year was 320.
Insane. That's amazing. I'm like,
that was COVID though. That was COVID and I was working for it. So, and that's everything cumulatively, right? That's bedside, that's social media, that's my job and that's my bonuses. So when you get into a medical sales company, no matter what algorithm you fall into, you're eligible for bonuses and or commission. I am not sales. I do not get commission, but I get bonuses based on projects that I do. So that is a nice boost in income. Minnesota pays really well for nurses. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, I moved from Iowa where they make like $24 an hour. Minnesota pays about $68. Iowa's hurting. But so when I pick up shifts, $68 an hour is nothing to scoff at. And it really supports, you know, still wanting to do that because if I were anywhere else, why would I waste the time essentially? And then, social media pays a bit, not a ton, but it does. So I'm sitting pretty. I can't complain. Yeah. And some like clinical specialists, it depends on what company you're in and what their algorithm and their, you know, protocols are. My husband works for a med device company and makes about 80 and that's normal. And so it just depends.
Yeah, it's just so different. And I think it's very cool that you know the medical device side, but you still get to be so clinical. Like you said you're in the OR all the time. I would love that. Like it actually sounds like if there's a job in ortho like this, it sounds like an ideal job for me because I am so hands-on and I think it sounds like you are too. So good job to have people. I think our listeners and viewers might want to look into this, even though it sounds like there's only one position in the country. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, other companies have similar positions. I'm the only one for mine for now. And again, I'm not speaking on behalf of my company. But when you're in the perfusion world and you're running a machine that only a certain amount of people can run, it pays. So it does really pay to perfect your craft.
I agree. 100%. All right. Let's get to my favorite question. We already talked about the things you love, but if there's one thing you love about your job, let us know. And then what do you hate about it? If you hate anything or what do you not like about it? And also you can talk about nursing and your current job, whatever you want.
So what I love about my current job and nursing in general is that it's like literal time traveling because the time when I graduated nursing school in 2014. And if you would have told me that some of the things that we're doing now in healthcare in general would be possible, it would be insane. And prior to that, you know, between the invention of penicillin and the first heart transplant, like there wasn't a ton of big things device-wise anyway. And so now you're just seeing all of these things that can prolong life and enhance life for individuals, you know, like my dad, who's disabled and needs something. And that's the thing that I hate simultaneously. I hate that just as much as I love it, because when I pick up those shifts in the ICU and I've got a 90-year-old on ECMO or a full code with, you know, riddled with cancer, and the family doesn't understand, the lack of healthcare education in this country makes me want to scream. And I feel like we do too much sometimes. And I think that that's a general feeling in all of nursing across the board. So you have to constantly ask yourself at what cost and whose cost. And one of the biggest things that I walked away from COVID was borrowed grief. I would come home and just be wrecked over these deaths of people I didn't know. And I started to not only compassion fatigue, but I started to recognize that that was kind of an overarching thing in my entire ICU career, because I've always worked at level one trauma centers. I've always worked in big transplant hospitals. Put a balloon pump in anybody, we'll keep you alive. But like, should we? Like, at what suffering point, you know? So the things that I like are the things that I hate simultaneously. It's definitely a double-edged sword.
Interesting. Yeah, you're the first person to give that kind of answer, like where this, it's the same answer, but yeah. It makes perfect sense, because it's just like, it's so important what you said about healthcare education. It really is lacking. Like, I don't know how to make it better for everyone, but I really think in like grade school, high school, we need to learn how to do taxes and run a business, and also like how the healthcare system works and how to advocate for yourself, but also like with some knowledge, right?
Because I
think the thing that I run into sometimes is now, you know, everyone's on social media and there's a big push to advocate for yourself. And I'm all about advocating for yourself and your family members, but in a way that makes sense, because if you don't have that knowledge, which isn't this, you know, it isn't the person's fault really, not right. That knowledge, but you can't properly advocate, and it doesn't always make sense. So yeah, it's like.
One of my favorite physicians, Bradley Griffith out of University of Maryland, said, "The system is broken, the people aren't." And like, I have reiterated that to myself constantly, because when patients come in and they've got this stack of like WebMD and like whatever they found on Facebook, I'm like, I'm not going to make fun of you for bringing to me articles that are, they're trash, but we're going to go through them together. And we're going to figure out how you can figure out to avoid this, because you're trying to advocate for yourself with a document that tells you to put garlic in your rectum, and like, let's talk about it. Like, let's think about this. We've got to do a better job, but, where do you start?
Yeah. And sitting with your patients and your patients' families and going through that it takes time, but it's super important, because like you said, it's not their fault that the only resource they know or have is WebMD.
Facebook.
I know. But you know, it's good. Like, I like educating people on the truth. I'm a big like justice girl. So, you know, like I'm kind of, if I have the chance to tell you that maybe the surgery you're thinking about getting is not necessary, like I'm going to tell you, you know, I think that's a big thing in my field at least, but
I agree. Yeah, no, I agree. When the amount of patients who have been like, would you get an LVAD? Would you get a lung transplant? And I've been like, no, but I'll help you. I would not do it.
I'm like, I told you I was emotional. I'm like thinking about you and COVID and like how I didn't, I'm like, I guess I'm lucky I didn't have to deal with the deaths firsthand, but a lot of my colleagues did. And I never got called in to help. So I don't know, but I can't imagine what you guys went through. Like, I just can't imagine it.
It still feels kind of like a fever dream. Like, it's not something that I sit and think about and be like, oh, the trauma. But sometimes you're like in the refrigerated aisle at the grocery store and you're like, oh, I hate this. Like this, I don't like this. Or like, I freaked out the other day because I was unpackaging a shower curtain. And I actually made a TikTok video about this. And the smell smells a lot like body bags. And I was like, I'm going to take a minute from this. But simultaneously, it was such an exercise in compassion. I mean, I learned from it. What else do you take away from that? You have to try.
Yeah. And I think every nurse, doctor, healthcare worker who went through a lot of that should have like free therapy forever, in my opinion.
Yeah. Housekeeping, dietary, all of them. We needed all of those people. Yes. So yeah, I agree. Yeah. I will take free therapy. I will take that.
let's real quick end by just discussing your social media agenda. I like to say agenda because, like, you know, I feel like we all have a reason why we end up like on camera. But yeah. You're, you know, I would say for me, you provide a lot of healthcare humor and comic relief. So what pushed you to start making videos?
Well, thanks. That makes me feel good. I accidentally went viral. I posted the first one after a horrific COVID shift where I came home and I poured myself a glass of wine. And my fiance was living back in Iowa at the time because he couldn't be here and he couldn't get sick. And also...
Wait, was this the one where you were like flicking yep. the wine? Yep. I remember that. Okay, sorry. Go on.
Yeah, that was it. That was the day. It was also the simultaneous, you know, historical crossover of the George Floyd murder here in Minneapolis. So like my city was literally on fire and my patients were dying and my family was nowhere to be found because they couldn't be around me. And yeah. I was just like, you know what? I'm going to tell the world what it's like. And boy, did I. So I woke up to like 1.5 million views and I was like, uh-oh. That was mistakes have been made, but I rolled with it because I just don't think that people understand what it's like to work in the hospital. They have no clue. You hear all the time, like, nurses just pass meds, don't they? And you're like, I wish. But simultaneously, I do want it to be a little bit more like informative about the generations of nursing and the devices and the types of procedures. And, you know, I started to get death threats over a couple of the organ donation videos, which means that the information is prudent. Like, people need to hear this. So I guess I went the other way with that. But yeah, it's for laughs. It's for education. It's you know, it's for fun. It's my debriefing sometimes. Hopefully never at the patient's like actual, you know, detriment. Like I don't want patients yeah. to think that. But you know, when a patient smuggles a peacock in their suitcase into the hospital, like, we should talk about this. This is hysterical. His name was Gerald and we loved him.
Oh, I can't handle that.
It happened.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the world should know about that. I mean, and if you're smuggling a peacock into the hospital, I mean, don't you realize people are probably going to talk about it?
So. Yeah, why are we hiding it if you think it's a good idea?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think it's a great idea. What I do want to end on is, would you do anything differently? And do you have any advice or one piece of advice for somebody who might want to go into a similar field as you or become an ICU nurse?
Sure. Would I do anything differently? Oh, that's loaded. I wouldn't be here if I did. But I do think that in another life, I would have liked to work solely for like the UN or like global aid or something. And I think that if I came from a different family and a different background and, you know, didn't go to college with $800 in my pocket, that I would have gone to medical school and probably gone on to be a surgeon, but that's just a different life. And when you come from where I come from, there's a lot of barriers to doing that. So, you know, nursing is a perfectly respectable field. I'm very happy that I'm in it. I'm very happy. The situations that I'm in and every patient is an ability to be a change agent, which is a unique thing. So those are probably the things that I would change and probably not be so hard on myself to like gun through all the education. Like, I just thought that I had to get it done and you can relax. Same. It's all right.
Yep.
You're going to turn 30 no matter what. So who gives a shit what your degree is when you do? So,
yeah.
Yeah. So that would be what I would change. And if, words of wisdom, and I tell this to every student that I precept and every new nurse and every new colleague that I have, is if you aren't willing to actually care for every patient, find a different job.
Yeah, I agree.
So yeah, if you can't care for the serial killers that will come in to be your patients from the max security, find a different job. If you can't care for the patient who is on, you know, post-op care for an abortion, find a different job. This is the job.
I loved talking to you today. I learned a lot. I think it's amazing how far you have come, especially given, you know, where you started. And it's really cool what you're doing. I see, like, you do have so much passion. It just, like, it's obvious. It comes across the screen.
Thanks.
You know, like, I hope one day we can meet in person. So let me know when you're ever in New York.
May. I'll be there in May. Let's hang out. Okay.
This is the So You Want to Work in Healthcare podcast with new episodes every month. Don't forget to subscribe to stay up to date on the latest releases.